What a reading, huh? You know that old saying that a picture is worth a thousand words? You know, how do you describe some things in your life? How do you describe, for example, the first time you hold a baby boy in your arms, or the first love that you get, or a terrifying experience when you're literally scared to death? How do you describe that? Or how do you describe the depths of depression when somebody you love has betrayed you? That's what John is doing today. That's what he's doing in Revelations. He's painting this vivid, vivid picture that's been revealed to him, and he's telling the story. Remember, this is an audience that's listening about what's going on, because his audience, quite frankly, had questions. They're looking at the world and they're saying, okay, then who really rules the world? You know, is it really God, you know? Because it doesn't look like to me. It looks like the Romans, that they're running the world today. And what's God doing anyway? I don't see anything that's God doing. Because it looks like to me that the whole world has gone to the dark side, right? That's what they would have said in Star Wars, you know? And from what I'm looking at, they'd said, is evil going to win? You know? And I thought to myself, when we look at the world today, you ever ask those questions yourself? Where is God? And what's going on, you know? Can and will God intervene on our behalf? That's what the first century audience was asking at that time. And so John sees this vision to answer it. And he sees Jesus Christ. He sees Jesus as what? A lamb, yes. And he tells John to write this story to the seven churches, which we talked about last week. He has seven churches as he addressed, all having different problems. But there was one thing in common that they all had, and that is that they were told not to have cultural accommodations with the Romans. Now, what does cultural accommodation mean, you might ask? Well, that means when we go ahead and we take on the values of the society that we live in, the beliefs, the behaviors, they tell us what to do, we do it. That is cultural accommodation. When for us Christians at the same time, it might mean, but in our home, we're living a whole different culture. It means that we're straddling two different cultures, trying to maintain balance. Anybody here being able to maintain balance? Kind of difficult, isn't it? You ever feel that way in the world? You think we might have something in common with this first century audience that John was talking to, right? So while we might not think that we do, I got to thinking about it, though, that he was saying to them, you can't honor the Romans' idols, right? But what about us? Do you think we might have a few idols today that we might be honoring other than God? Maybe materialism, maybe our own self-interest, what's in it for me that we say daily, whether we admit it or not. Even living in our own country, sometimes as Christians we're called to think about how much we believe in something, and we believe in capitalism, right? And we all participate in it, but when we're home at night and when we're thinking about it, we might say to ourselves, but isn't there a Christian value about the rich not having the money and the poor being hungry or homeless? You see the straddle when we're thinking about that, right? And so John says, don't get so cozy with the culture, because it's the wrong thing to do. And so he says to them, they say to him, okay, then tell us, why is cultural accommodation so bad? And he says there's two reasons. One of them is that that's not the true worship of God, and you're called to center your lives, to center everything that's going on in the church on worshiping God. Everything that we do is worship. And the other thing was this, that the world under Roman control was under God's judgment. And the fact that you could see it was under God's judgment was the destructive ways that the Roman Empire was running the world. So then his seals begin to tell this stories. Now, these are not seals like the zoo. It's actually seals, right? And he opens the first seals, and he sees what? Four different colored horses, right? These are not new horses coming into the world. These are horses that are already existing in the world today. They're present, and they symbolize the events that are going on, the judgment events. There's war. There's conflict. There's inflation. There's destruction. Those four horses, I think, are still here. What do you think? Well, the white horse, which we don't have, meant victory. It reveals what the empires do. What they do, they assert their power to further their own interests for their particular country, right? They go in and they take resources from other countries. They oppress people. And Rome was more than eager to do that. They'd take their military power, they'd conquest, they'd go out and they would get other lands. And as a result of that, do you think the other empires liked what they were doing? Which brought on wars, which brought on oppression, you know? And as a result, there's this conflict and struggle that's continuing in this first century group that's going on there. And I thought, you know, colonialism, right? Is it not the white horse still tromping around throughout the world today? The second horse was red. It was the color, what do you think it was the color of? Blood, yes. And it represented war. A world that was in violence and that was shedding blood, the blood of the innocents, many, many times. A world that by what it's doing is destroying itself. And I thought, is the red horse still with us today? I think so. So in the third seal, we have a black horse. What would you guess that the black horse represents? Death, yes. It represents food shortages. It represents starvation for the people of the earth. Because in the ancient world, all these food resources were really a source of power. Perhaps for us, it may not be so much food, but it might be energy resources, plus food resources, and access to water. It might be for us today. So the horse also made me think of maybe North Korea and its military buildup while the citizens starve. That might be a good representative of that. Many people in the ancient world, you see, experienced hunger while the elites took everything that they possibly could have, which would be contrary to our Christian faith, wouldn't it? Which would leave the first century audience say, why, Lord, right? So this horse is revealing that God's judgment is happening to humans because the nation, and the nations because of how they are treating the resources of the earth. And the culmination of everything that we've talked about, the war, the conflict, the starvation, the death, all culminates in the fourth horseman that comes in. And it's a pale green rider. And what do you think that might represent? It's a corpse. It's a rotting, decaying corpse. It's the color of the corpse because this horse has been from birth. It's been birthed in violence. It's been birthed in conflict. It's been birthed in famine. It's been birthed in destruction. And all those things, when they go on in the world, lead to death, don't they? Lead to destruction. Undernutrition, for one thing. I thought to think about that the other day. I was thinking that 3.1 million children or so die each year because of a famine-related element caused by abuse of power. And I thought, this is a consequence not just of war that we see it, but it's actually a consequence of an unjust system, isn't it? It's not a system that we have existing in our world today that gives equally to everyone so that no one hungers. The rich, not the poor, benefit from what's going on. You see, the Roman Empire was like this octopus. It had its tentacles in every place within the world, in the Mediterranean. And every place it went, it'd say, give me your money, give me your food, and it took it from everybody. And in turn, the elite turned around in their own homes and they sucked everything out of the peasants. And Rome was not only taking jewels and food and animals, but ultimately would take the worst product possible. What do you suppose that might be? They'd take other humans. They would take them as slaves to the power that they were trying to exert in the world. No matter what they did, John's listeners were suffering at that time. And they suffered even more than anybody else, because when the elite knew that they were Christians, they weren't even allowed to buy and sell anything. It's like food or clothing. They were just total outcasts in a system that was totally against what they believed in. And as a result, can you imagine how anxious they were? Can you imagine how difficult it might have been to be able to continue in that early first century to be among the faithful? Have you ever thought about what if they didn't? Where would we be today? So the fifth seal comes along, fifth and the sixth seal. And this, in the fifth and sixth seal, it's talking about that anxiety. And it says, when he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who have been slaughtered for the word of God and for the testimony they've been given. And the fifth seal is talking specifically about what's happening to his listeners, you see, because those that didn't bow down to the Roman religious cult, there were altars all over the Roman Empire. And those Christians that wouldn't bow down there would be slaughtered on those altars, slaughtered for their faith. And it reached a climax under the Emperor Domitian, who was reigning, of course, when John wrote, and he asked everyone to address him as Lord as God. So do you see why it's asking, who is your God? We have Domitian, who's the Lord and God. He even put his face on the coins. We'll talk about that next week, right? Claiming divinity. So we have God Domitian, and we have our God, and that's what's in the balance. And so with the fifth and sixth seal, the martyrs are told, rest a little bit longer until the completion of God's purposes. Injustice is going to continue, but time will come when God's justice will be established. And I thought, that's probably the most discouraging thing I ever heard. It's not going to happen now. You're going to suffer even more. And I thought, well, yay. Let me run now. But that's not the way John was writing it for. See, John was not writing this to discourage him. John was trying to encourage his listeners. He was trying to give them some good news in the middle of a lot of bad, bad experiences, you know. He's trying to strengthen the flock, but he's still trying as well to prepare them. There's cruelty. There's persecution. There's real ugliness in the world that's about to come. And he's trying to give them strength for the journey, and he's trying to build them up. He's trying to make them recognize that it's a lie. Rome is not all-powerful. It's a false and it's fading age. It will go around. It will go away. That would have been hard to realize at that point, wouldn't it? Because when you're surrounded by a system, you're involved in a system, you never think that it could go away. It would be like me saying to you, the United States, as powerful as it is, will be gone. And what would you think? No way, right? But that's what he's saying. And you know what? He was right, because Domitian was assassinated and the Roman Empire was gone within 300 years. So John's listeners were saying, don't proclaim an empire that's not true, that's going away. He's saying, proclaim the power of God in your lives, because that was last forever. And that's one of the questions that I thought about this week. I thought, how much do we accommodate the culture that we're living in? Do you think that the current world powers are going to bring about peace and justice? Nah, I don't think so either. And what about you individually? Do you live with integrity, doing the right thing, despite the fact that somebody else may object to that? Do you live your life worshiping God? Your life is worship. Or do you say, well, I'm in the world here, but I'm going to parcel out just a little bit of time for God on Sunday, and if I can sneak in a prayer before I fall asleep at night, I'm going to put that in there too. If an anthropologist would come and look at your life and how you spend your time, what conclusion do you think they might draw? Do you think they would say you're a citizen of God's kingdom? Or would you be a citizen of the world? Because while we live in the world, we don't have to act on what the world tells us. And you might be in Rome, but Rome doesn't have to be in you. John wants us to know that while death and destruction might come from worshiping the powers of the world, there is a reward. There's a reward if we choose to worship God essential in our life. And he paints this beautiful picture for his listeners in chapter 7. Those who have experienced this tribulation and seen their friends die, those that remain faithful. And he says they have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. For this reason they are before the throne of God and worship him day and night within his temple. And the one who's seated on that throne is going to shelter them, is going to care for them. And then two things happen. There's total silence in the world, and an event occurs. First, the angel offers the prayers to all the saints of God, giving them encouragement and assurance in what they're doing. And then a second event occurs. It says, I saw the seven angels, seven, who were standing before God, and seven trumpets were given to them. Now, this is not a new set of calamities that's coming on the world, which you might think when you start reading the rest of the chapters this week, but it's a retelling of the judgment story that's going to end in chapter 11 by saying, the kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our God, the Lord, the Messiah. So throughout Revelation, which you're about to find out, John is retelling the story of this is what happened, the persecution, this is the punishment for the persecutors, and this is the salvation for the persecuted. God wins, there's peace at the world, that's the end of the story. And I thought, you know, that's good news for us too, because someday it's our Christian belief that God's kingdom will be here on earth. It gives us hope. That should give us purpose in our life to be part of bringing in the kingdom of God. So we end today our reading of chapter 8 as if a listener said, now, John, can you tell me another story? And so John begins again. He says, well, sit back, look up at the heavens, and let me tell you a story next week, a story about seven angels, seven trumpets, a dragon, a pregnant woman, and two beasts.